Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We're going to continue this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 33, Activities of Kapila, Text 5. So the section that we're reading, it's Devahuti having illusion removed by the association and kind instruction of Kapila Dev. She's now offering prayers in glorification of him, and her prayers begin from addressing him as the Purusha avatar. Now he's in a different category. He's in the Shaktivesha avatar. But the avatar means one who descends, and the one who descends is the supreme source of everything. So she sees him that way. And this verse this morning is now more focusing on the teachings that he gives, you know, the Shakti, the particular Shakti that Kapila Dev is empowered with is Sankhya philosophy or Jnana Shakti. And she's describing in this verse how he does or what he does with that empowerment of transcendental knowledge, why he does what he does. Of course, compassion is ruling, prevailing. It's very similar to when we were describing 2 evenings ago, the prayer of Queen Kunti that expresses the, some say that you come to revive the process of devotional service, and beginning with hearing, chanting, and remembering, you, the personality of Godhead. So she's, Devahuti here is saying something very similar in this verse, text number 5. And there's some other points also. Translation, my dear Lord, you have assumed this body in order to diminish the sinful activities of the fallen and to enrich their knowledge in devotion and liberation. Since these sinful people are dependent on your direction, by your own will you assume incarnations as a boar and other forms. Similarly, you have appeared in order to distribute transcendental knowledge to your dependents. That's everybody. We're all dependents. Purport. In the previous verses, there's only been three of them, 2, 3, 4. The general transcendental qualifications of the Supreme Personality of Godhead were described. Now, the specific purpose of the Lord's appearance is also described. By his different energies, he bestows different kinds of bodies upon the living entities who are conditioned by their propensity to lord it over material nature. But in course of time, these living entities become so degraded that they need enlightenment. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that whenever there are discrepancies in the discharge of the real purpose of this material existence, the Lord appears as an incarnation. the Lord's form as Kapila, directs the fallen souls and enriches them with knowledge and devotion so that they may go back to Godhead. There are many incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like those of the boar, fish, tortoise, and the half-man, half-lion. Lord Kapiladeva is also one of the incarnations of Godhead. It is accepted herein that Lord Kapiladeva appeared on the surface of the earth to give transcendental knowledge to the misguided conditioned souls. So several points. Prabhupada is connecting this verse to some of the verses of Bhagavad Gita, the reason for the Lord's appearance, Pritranaya Satunam, etc. So Kapiladeva is as an incarnation, it's one of those forms of the Lord that appear, and he's fulfilling these purposes. Now, in his incarnation, we don't have any indication of his having weapons and killing the demons and things like that. So, therefore, his incarnation is more the giving of knowledge to relieve the forgetful souls of their ignorance and deliver them to the path of perfection. Other forms of the Lord have similar function, like, interestingly, Matsya Avatar. He not only saves the Vedas, he gives the Vedas to Satyavrata. So, you know, very interesting form to manifest for that purpose of fish giving knowledge of the Vedas, which indicates a number of things. That the form of a fish is not like the fish that we know, it's the other way around. And the fullness of the potencies are within the personality of Godhead when he appears in that form. So it's not, it's another way of saying it's not an ordinary form. And the language of he assumes this form, just like here, it's in the verse. My dear Lord, you have assumed this body in order to diminish the sinful activities of the fallen. Tantra is the Sanskrit word. So usually Prabhupada speaks about this. Here he hasn't, but it's not to be understood that the form is different than the person. So he, like us, we've been awarded a body by material nature. So in that sense, we've assumed a form, but it's not really us. But in the case of the personality of Godhead, his assuming a form is making prakat, or making manifest, his form. In that sense. In other words, the form is not temporary. The form is an eternal form, and he manifests that eternal form. And how does he do that? By his potencies. In fact, how does he do anything? By his potencies. We touched on this a little bit yesterday, but I'm appreciating more than in the recent while, past few months, the way in which Krishna does what he does. It's, of course, I've heard it a million times, but he does everything through his potencies. So, manifesting the form of Kapila, how does he do that? Through his potencies. From the previous verses, how does he manifest creation? Through his potencies. How does he manifest the spiritual realm through his potencies? How does he manifest his activities in his various forms through his potencies? Specifically, in Tattvasandarbha, Jiva Goswami expresses, makes reference to Srimad Bhagavatam, where when the Lord does this function or activity or lila of creation, with the activity of creation goes various potencies of the Lord, where the demigods, the controllers of that which he creates, are unable to do their service. Of course, if he wants to terminate the creation, he just withdraws that potency. It's very simple. And the material nature has its various potencies. Just like, one example is herbs. There's one devotee that was telling me this story. There was an Ayurvedic Kaviraj, and he had many students, and he told the students, okay, now that you've completed school, here's your exam. Go out into the forest and bring back only those herbs that have no special potency. So they all came back with their, what they thought was herbs that, or plants that didn't have some special potency, except one, he didn't come back. He's gone for 6 months and finally came back and said, I failed. I couldn't find any herbs that didn't have any potencies. He said, you're the best student. You've got it right. So where do the potencies of plants come from? Like Prabhupada would speak about a lemon tree. Dig in the earth and see how much citric acid there is in the earth. Where does the lemon tree get the capacity to produce citric acid? And so, one can say, the Paramatma, or the Purusha avatar forms of the Lord, because just like in Paramatma Sundarbha, the Lord is manipulating this material nature through his potencies. Then he does that through the demigods, and he does, and they do things through their facilities. But ultimately, it's the Supreme Personality of Godhead's potencies, just variously manifesting. And without those potencies, plants can't produce medicinal properties, and lemon trees can't produce citric acid, and the mridanga isn't going to make a mridanga sound, and whatever. It's just the potencies are for everything. There isn't an exception. Everything is invested with potencies. That the purpose of creation is fulfilled, not only the act of creating, but the things that even material nature does. It's invested by the Supreme Lord, the source of all potencies. And that's just on the material side. And then there's everything on the spiritual side. And everything comes from his potencies. Even those potencies are eternal. It's not like this anadi discussion from yesterday and the day before. Souls are from Krishna. But it's not that once upon a time there weren't any souls. To say that the souls are the jivatma, or the tatastha shakti, is a potency of Krishna, doesn't mean they came into being at some point in time. They're eternally potencies of the Supreme Lord. And the abode of the Supreme Lord, it's manifest by Lord Balaram, but it's not once upon a time there wasn't an abode, and Balaram said, gee, we better have an abode, and so he manifested the spiritual realm. Not like that. These are potencies that rest upon the Supreme Lord, the spiritual and material ones, everything. And the uniqueness of each of the forms of the Lord, as Prabhupada is saying at the beginning of the purport. There's the general transcendental qualifications of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then there's the specific features that are manifest by Kapila, or manifest by any of the incarnations, and in the form of Leela, and or in the form of teachings, and or in the form of interactions with his devotees, and or in the form of, and this specifically here, giving knowledge that removes ignorance, revitalizing the process of devotional service for those that have forgotten, restoring the living entity's higher purpose of life when they have forgotten, so they can go back to Godhead, which is the Lord's desire. So when he makes the creation, it's not whimsical. Like, you know, some people criticize. Oh, there must be no God. Because if there is God, he's supposed to be all good, and he creates a place where people suffer, and people suffer, so there must be no God. Or else he's bad. Or else he just made a mistake. That's I haven't read the book, but I've been told that's a reprinted book, many times reprinted by a Jewish man, rabbi, why bad things happen to good people, and the conclusion is God made a mistake. How else could you explain? Because God is good, but he makes a mistake sometimes, and he made a place that where people suffer. Poor fellow. And with this understanding of the potencies of the personality of Godhead, it's one of the first lessons that Jiva Goswami introduces to understand the Supreme, to understand the Absolute Truth. The refutation of impersonal teaching that says God has no potency. His indication is, by taking that position, it's certifying they will not understand properly Brahman. They'll have a misconception of Brahman. Brahman means the Supreme. To say that God has no potencies, besides it's offensive, your father has no personality. Excuse me. My father has personality. Well, your father has personality, but his father doesn't have personality. No form, no qualities. Your father has no qualities. Or your grandfather, you know, the origin of everything has no qualities, has no form, has no personality, has no activities. It's like, you know, blind, deaf, and dumb. Excuse me. So besides being offensive, it precludes, it's not possible to understand what Brahman is, just from the get-go. Because Brahman, in fact, is an aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The effulgence is the effulgence of a person. And within that effulgence, there may not be all the variegatedness of the spiritual world manifest, but the variegatedness of the spiritual world is the rest and place from which the effulgence comes. It just guarantees they won't understand, besides it's offensive. They can't understand the world around them, and they can't understand the world beyond them. And it's called spiritual. And there's a lot of people that buy into it. Very unfortunate. There is such an aspect, but to say there's nothing more is something like the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Some people say, most people say, the purpose of the Vedas, or the purpose of religion in general, is to prosper in this life and go to the heavenly realm and prosper even more, and there's nothing more. That's the karmakanda notion and the gyanakanda notion, and there's nothing more. Well, it's not correct. Karmakanda is correct, gyanakanda is correct, and upasanakanda is the complete. And the purpose of the other two is to get to that one. And without proper, just like this discussion yesterday, without a teacher that has the proper understanding, one isn't going to reach that conclusion. One is not going to reach that conclusion. Without one carrying bhakti, you can't even begin bhakti. You'll do something else. And you'll reach another conclusion, doing that something else. And Krishna says, I make that person's faith strong, doing that something else. It's good, it's right, it's the way. And then conversely, by accepting that the absolute truth not only does but must have unlimited potencies, the absolute truth, if you were to say the absolute truth can't this and can't that and can't the other thing, then it's not the absolute truth. The absolute truth can do this and that and the other thing. Otherwise, it's not the absolute truth. How can you even think of something that can't be done? You couldn't be able to have that thought if it can't be done. Where'd you get the thought? It can be done. The Vedas, for example, the Vedas are filled with descriptions of powers that worldly people think, no, that can't be done. So it must be fiction. Well, you know, one could give so many examples of things that people some years ago thought couldn't be done, and now it's being done, just even in terms of technology. I remember the first time somebody told me what a fax machine is. I thought they were pulling my leg. Put in a piece of paper over here, and over there comes a piece of paper that's identical with the paper you put in over here. I said, no, come on. No, it's true. And now you can have one that you're just walking around. You're walking down the hallway of an airport, and you print out something that somebody sent somewhere else. And so on, without so many anecdotal so-ons. A horseless carriage, Detroit. No. A flying machine, no. Go to the moon, no. Go to Mars, live up there. The latest is we're going to be on Mars by 2050. People living there. That's like, anyway, without more. So if those potencies can be done by those whose consciousness is not as subtle as mystic yogis, then the powers of mystic yogis, they can do things. All it is, Prabhupada explains this, mystic power is simply manipulation of material laws. Nothing more than that. That, you know, you pull this and that wiggles. That's all it is. And because the knowledge of the laws is subtle, because their consciousness is subtle and they pull this and that wiggles, oh, you must be God. So where does mystic power come from? Yogeshwara, the master of mystic power. And making a creation is just, in one sense, it's a mystical power. But, you know, what he does This is the topics of the Bhagavatam, Sarga and Visarga. He brings the elements all together and makes the plan and gives the Srishti Shakti to Lord Brahma, and he puts it all together. But even when he puts it all together, then there's demigods, and demigods can't do what they have to do until they are empowered by the personality of Godhead. And so on. Just something that I learned a little bit, I plan to learn some more, from Radhika Raman. Some of you may know Radhika Raman. From Boise, Idaho, that has his, is it the professor and whatever, he's the professor of philosophy. Having done his PhD thesis on a few verses from three or four verses from the entire Sandarvas, just one section, small section of Paramatma Sandarva, did an entire PhD thesis. So the sequence of the, from him I've understood, the sequence of the Sandarvas goes first Tattva Sandarva, which establishes the means of knowing Krishna and the truths about Krishna are to be understood through three different sets of things. The heart of Vyas, the author or compiler, and the heart of Shukadeva, the speaker, what's in their heart is what the Bhagavatam is. And then samasti vyasti, the comparison of the individual particle of gold to understand the gold mine. And then conversely, understand the gold mine, you can understand the quality of the particle of gold. In that, by that methodology, statements within the Bhagavatam that teach about the quality of the soul tells us something about the quality of the Supreme. That's the message, second. And the third is the 10 topics described by Shukadeva and then later by Sutta Goswami. That's what the subject matter is. So after Tattva Sandarbha, where do you go next? Well, one might think you go to Krishna, but he doesn't. He goes to the Paramatma Sandarbha, then Bhagavat Sandarbha, then Krishna Sandarbha, because his audience is not people that accept Krishna. But they may accept Vishnu. And so there's the Vishnu feature, and then the Bhagavan feature, and then Krishna is the source of all. Very logical. So whether it's the material creation, which is Paramatma Sandarbha, it's you know, the three Purushas, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Shiradakshay Vishnu, and through their various potencies, how they do what they do. In terms of creation, you know, Maya Dyakshena Prakriti. That's the Vishnu feature of the Lord. Then the Bhagavan feature of the Lord, of which the Paramatma feature is the basis. And then, so what is the Bhagavan feature of the Lord? And then amongst all the features of the Lord, Krishna is the Supreme. But the whole thing works on the Supreme Lord has potencies. If you're going to be, if you're not going to accept the Lord has potencies, you're not going to understand God. You're not going to understand Krishna, you're not going to understand Bhagavan, you're not going to understand Paramatma. You'll say some gobbledygook instead. And people think, wow. Word jugglery. There's one of the, just a little history, but I can't remember his name, but there was some, from Shankaracharya's time, he wrote his commentary on Vedanta Sutra. And so the Sampradaya Acharyas, they wrote commentary on Vedanta Sutra to refute Shankaracharya's teachings. And then historically later, some other Shankaracharya followers wrote other commentary in defense of Shankaracharya's teachings and attempting to refute the Vaishnava Acharya's teachings. Then there's one, he spent his whole life making this, what's described as like this amazingly convoluted, this means that, kind of a program, to screw out a meaning of indirect meanings from things that you should take the direct meaning. And, you know, to justify what Jiva Goswami calls, not nonsensical or absurd, but something, a word is like that. Incomprehensible. No person in his right mind would say all these things. But, you know, so dog stubborn, Prabhupada's term, donkey stubborn, somehow just equate yourself with God, and he has no potencies. Dog obstinacy, that's his word. So we don't necessarily have to bother our brain about refuting Mayavad philosophy, although there's merit in doing so, at least for our own conviction. Why is it that we say what we say on the authority of Scripture? But at least in principle, minimally in principle, there's innumerable and inconceivable potencies of the personality of Godhead, and thus he can appear as Kapila Dev. He can, like the previous verse, he can appear in the womb of Devaki. Devahuti. She's saying this is a mystery. But it's understandable because he can lie on the back of a banyan leaf, so why he can't lie in the womb of his mother, Devahuti. He has innumerable, inconceivable potencies, both spiritual and material, and with them he can do whatever he likes. And he does whatever he likes. So what's he liking? He's reciprocating with Kardamuni and Devahuti in a very special way because of their special devotion. He's appearing as their son. Before doing so, he appeared even before he got married. Kardamuni off in the forest, the beginning of Satyayuga, and there's nothing but nature and his process of meditation and devotion. But Vishnu appears and says, I understand your heart, you want me to become your son, I'll become your son. So he knew before it even happened. So he's reciprocating with his devotees, and for the non-devotees, he's kind to them too. And he's giving his teachings to them through his mother. Now, how that message to his mother became broadcast to others and such that, because this is Maitreya speaking to Vidura, somehow by the cyclic succession. So although she's not, you know, a super scholar, somehow she was able to convey to somebody what she heard from Lord Kapila. There's a lot of detail what she heard from Lord Kapila. She didn't have a recorder device. Somehow she conveyed that. Or Vyas being Trikalagya could understand, doesn't say precisely. At least I'm not aware. But she became fully enlightened by the transcendental potency of Lord Kapila, as was intended for others. And that's the purpose of his appearance, to revive, revitalize, restore the process of bhakti in the lives of people that have forgotten. Exactly what Srila Prabhupada said. Little Prabhupada story. I couldn't remember this, but one of the devotees who was there. Could you come forward? It's like hard to see you back there. Thank you. A god brother who he had a nice program at 22nd Avenue the day after Krishna Janmashtami, which is Prabhupada's appearance day. So we had a nice gathering at 22nd Avenue, and Prabhupada disciples were invited to speak something. So one devotee described how he became a devotee and how he was engaged in, you know, in the initial phases of his Krishna consciousness. And shortly after, it was the summer of 1971, Prabhupada was coming to New York. And, you know, he was just this new bhakta, like a few weeks having been around. Prabhupada's coming. So, skipping a lot of the detail, during that time, the temple didn't have cars, so we didn't have money. We were relying on whoever had cars, so he had a car. And so he was able to drive devotees to the airport to greet Prabhupada. And the part that he remembers, the part that I wanted to share that he was narrating that evening, was the joy. You know, 3 weeks as a devotee, he had never met Prabhupada, he'd certainly heard of Prabhupada, but the joy of the devotees receiving Prabhupada. You know, he knew how to paint, so he was painting and painting and painting in Prabhupada's quarters, fixing the temple, this and that, you know, day and night, night and day, the marathon that went on before Prabhupada arrived. So Prabhupada made a comment, every place I go, I smell fresh paint. We weren't really considering the toxic nature of paint at the time and how that was maybe not good for Prabhupada's health. We had to have fresh paint everywhere he went. So then we're off at the airport, and they didn't have TSA security at that time. So the devotees, anybody that, you know, you could go anywhere in the airport. So a few hundred devotees went to the gate having kirtan, and then when Prabhupada came out of the plane, the kirtan went wild, and, you know, bouncing off the ceilings and the walls, and loud, loud kirtan, and strewing flower petals all over the airport, the security wondering, what's with these people? And then there was an arrangement for a reporter to interview Prabhupada right there in the airport. So went to a lounge, Prabhupada sat down, and all the devotees sat down. The reporter sat next to Prabhupada, and the first question was, Swamiji, you have come from India, and your movement is growing very quickly. There must be some important message you would like the people in the Western countries to learn. What is that message you came to deliver? Held the microphone. So Prabhupada's message was, this is not verbatim, but something to the effect, I've come to teach you who you are because you have forgotten. And then went on, Bhagavad Gita. So simple. At the same time, because of its simplicity, so profound. And it's so similar to what's being said here about Kapila. And the, you know, the representative of Lord Kapila, or the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world, is to assist him in his mission, giving the knowledge is with a purpose. Knowledge without a purpose, without application, it's incomplete. That's saying it nicely, or it, you know, it's useless. A little more strongly. So, to teach the process, so that people can follow the process with proper knowledge instead of speculative, perhaps, maybe, or to me it feels da-da-da-da-da. And then go that direction. But properly guided activity in life, direct the activities of life towards the goal of life and the means of purification to ensure that you'll get there. So that's revitalization of the bhakti process. Included in the bhakti process is transcendental knowledge, how to live your life in devotion to Krishna or Lord Kapila, etc., the forms of the Lord. So that's our duty also. We're not the acharya of the organization that Prabhupada created. He's the founder acharya. We're little representatives. And so our service is similar to his, to assist him. Take this knowledge, apply it in our lives, and transmit as transparently as we can, without editing and deleting, the message. Live the message, present the message, provide the opportunity, at least the opportunity, not make people follow. So that language is used by parents sometimes. I make my child pay his obeisances or something. So, not that. Just create the atmosphere where life of transcendence can be revitalized. That's our life. Receive it. Internalize it. Live it. And share it with others. Okay, so any discussion? Yes?
At the beginning you said that Kapila Dev is a Shakti Vaishya avatar. So I'm wondering, why is it that he is accepting this glorification as Purusha avatar? I was thinking about when we accept Srila Prabhupada as a Shakti Vaishya avatar, but when the devotees claimed that he was God, he was not having it.
Okay. Well, good question. Prabhupada came in a jiva soul is strongly averse to there's two parts. Strongly averse to being called Vishnu, just like Mahaprabhu, when he was called Vishnu, he put his hands on his ears and run into the Ganga and jump in the Ganga. Vishnu, 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 just for purification, having been heard that he's God, although he was God. Because he was playing the role, in his lila of a living entity, the devotee of Krishna. So for a devotee of Krishna to hear your Krishna, or Vishnu, or God, it's intolerable, it's offensive, and so saying it is offensive, and hearing it is offensive, and so purification. On the other hand, the Shaktyavesha avatar, in the case of Kapila, he is performing the function of the personality of Godhead directly. And so, as the one who is performing the function of the personality of God is carrying the potency of the personality of Godhead. So now, I'd have to research, and I can't supply the answer at the moment, whether Kapila Dev is a Vishnu Tattva or Jiva Tattva, but Shaktivesh avatar may also be a Vishnu tattva, as is Anantashesh is the classic example. He's Vishnu tattva, but he's in the category of Shaktivesh avatar. So the function of Kapila Dev was as the personality of Godhead. Now, Lord Vishnu appeared before Kardama saying, I will appear as your son. Makes it sound like, well, it's Lord Vishnu, not, so a Vishnu tattva, not Jiva tattva. But to say, for Lord Vishnu to say, I'll appear as your son, it could also be a Jiva empowered by him. You know, the category is different, but the effect is the same. But the place that I would go to research, the only place I know where these things are gathered up in one place is the new BBT publication, Laghu Bhagavatamrita. Where the whole book is just this one subject matter, or primarily this one subject matter, the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. So I'll do a little research for my own edification. Anything else? Yes?
One of the things that was coming home to me was like, when I deal with people around me or even the light feels like very complex, and that brings in fear and anxiety.
Because of the complexity?
Yeah, and I feel like when I'm hearing you, one of the things that I'm realizing is because I lost I lost the attention of Krishna.
The connection. Your attention has gone elsewhere. But so the connection is, don't worry. I preserve what they have and carry what they lack. But unto those two, unto those who, ananyas shunti anto mam, yejana paryupasate, tesham nityabhiyuktanam, yogakshema vaham yaham. Unto those who, ananya chintayanto mam, Ananya, chintayanto mam. Chinta, consciousness, mam, unto Krishna. Ananya, nothing else. So the complexity is, you know, it's like a knife through soft butter. The complexity is soft butter. When ananya chintayanto mam. Because the focus isn't taken away by the complexity. It may stretch it a little bit or challenge it a little bit, but it's, you know, that's what seeing the connection between you as the servant of Krishna and Krishna, and here's a situation that Krishna is placing before you that's complex, you don't get disturbed or stressed out or fearful or whatever. The connection with Krishna is unharmed by the complex circumstance. You may or may not know exactly the right thing to do in this complex circumstance, but you rely on Krishna for the intelligence what to do. And as best as Krishna gives you the intelligence, you stay fixed on trying to please Krishna, serve Krishna in the circumstance. And by exercising that bhakti muscle, it gets stronger. Go the other way, and that's like I'm the controller. I got to control things to get the complex circumstance to be nice again. Well, we're not the controller, so that's the anxiety. Instead of seeing service opportunity, it's, you know, things are out of control. Stay in the mood of humble service, relying upon Krishna. He's the source of everything. the source of the complexity as well as the intelligence how to deal with it. There's a nice verse in the Bhagavatam, I can't remember, 11th canto somewhere, where Krishna places his devotees into different situations. At the same time, Krishna always gives protection and the intelligence how to deal with those situations. Now that's the devotee. Then the non-devotee gets bewildered and whatever else. Or the mixed devotee gets, how do we deal with this? So asking the question, how do I deal with this, can be from a place of fear or can be a place of Krishna, you know, I'm relying upon you. Well, it's the point that you're bringing up is similar, or my response would be similar to this same point. You're protected if you're in your relationship with Krishna. The all potency comes from Krishna, including the complexity and including the right course of action for you. He's the source of everything. So we're not mature yet. It's like, you know, a little kid growing up and not mature yet. We don't have the intelligence how to navigate. Bhayam dutiyam. This is a nice verse. Bhayam dutiyam abhinivesha takshat. Fear arises when one has abhinivesh or affinity for or attachment to other than Krishna. Dvatiyam. Dutiyam, it's generic. A second thing, you name it. It's not even a specific something, just anything. And so the bhakti process conversely removes the fear. Because the bhakti process means I'm cultivating abhinivesh. It's a strong word. It's not just an attraction for its attachment to. I'm developing attraction for and eventually attachment to Krishna. And when that comes, it's a stage of bhakti, asakti. When that stage comes, fear's gone. Fear is a byproduct of being attached to other things besides Krishna. There's another phrase that comes at the end. Vayam dvatiyam abhinivesi takshyat yaparyayo smriti. Smriti, you know, the mind. Remembrance, what's in the mind? So if the complex situation, to say it this way, progress in Krishna consciousness will be demonstrated by your thoughts remain with Krishna when there's this feature of duality or that feature of duality. So when it's kind of normal, maybe it's easier. When there's like benedictory, maybe we just get, you know, filled with enjoying the benedictory thing. When it's difficult, you know, is the mind aparya yo smritihi. That's what we remember in Krishna. In all circumstances. That's not going to happen if we're attached to something else. If we're attached to Krishna, it will happen regardless of the something else, regardless of circumstances. So that's the acknowledgement, your self-acknowledgement of your situation is fine. It's good. It's a good place to start from. Then where do I go? Because I don't like that fear. I know it's disruptive. I'm not handling the situation well. Besides, it doesn't feel good. So now what do I do? You cultivate, in all activities, starting with the chanting of the holy name, cultivate remaining focused upon Krishna. Initially, just by the discipline of controlling the mind and bringing the mind to Krishna, but gradually purification by doing that, then some attraction for Krishna and the diminishing of attraction for other things. You know, the easier ones go first, and then there's ones that are more dear to you, the other than Krishna things.
There's a question from somebody.
Okay.
I also have one, but maybe. So this person, his name is Anil Rawat, and he's asking how to motivate ourselves to do sadhana regularly in difficult times or times that Maya is luring us.
Well, one is the commitment to do so. Another is stay in good association. So if you feel whatever the feelings are, distracted or fearful or whatever, you have good association and they can tap you on the shoulder and bring you back. Or just give sound vibration that's transcendental sound vibration and helps you come back. Another is regulation. You know, regulation means regardless of this feature or that feature of duality, I'm committed. It's similar to commitment, but I have this practice that I follow because of the mode of goodness. I know that it's good for me. I know that it will purify me. So I'm fixed in my regulation. And the purpose of the regulation, the purpose of the activity of which you've decided to become regulated in, is that it's recommended in the Vedas, it's purifying. So it's the cultivation of the quality of goodness will definitely help. Then it's regardless of the circumstance, duality is like this or like that. It's inoperative. It's the principle of I'm doing this because it's good for me. Or I'm doing this because it will purify me. And I want purification, so I'll follow through.
My question was based on one of the last things you said about receiving.
About what?
You said receiving, internalizing, living by, and then sharing.
Yeah.
Transcendental knowledge. So, if I understand, to be able to live by, it's important to internalize.
Yes.
But I think I get stuck at this internal. I don't even know sometimes how to go about actually.
How to go about it?
Yeah, and I like in a way that I will live by it. I feel like I receive a lot, and I'm inspired by a lot of things, but it just kind of in the moment I appreciate something and then I don't internalize it. And
well, remember that a conversation we had about acting from the heart, and I recommended you reference somebody that would help you understand acting from the heart. It's that's the answer. So it's, you know, if it just stays, you know, at the head level, it's gonna. That there's this saying: if you don't use it, you lose it. So, and the head level, there's so much flooding our heads that we, you know, pay attention to something for a while, and then something else gets our attention, and it's gone. So the take it beyond the head level to the heart level. So then how do I receive from the heart? How do I act, receive, and then act from the heart? That's the subject. You can go back to your notes from that conversation, or again connect with the person, and it's a bhakti principle as opposed to a gyan principle. Bhakti principle goes to the heart. Shrinvanti gayanti grananti. That's the internalize. Which is very different than, you know, the education process that we're all too familiar with, or so familiar with. It's information, but not transformation. The transformation is an internal one, where we actually change, not just say, wow, that was nice. That touched me. And then we move on, because it just stayed in the head level. Bhakti is one of the places to start, aside from, you know, checking your notes, is regulation. You do something regularly. Just like, you know, how we started chanting. Somebody said, why don't you chant? Or we may say to somebody, why don't you try this chanting process? You like kirtan? Try chanting on a regular basis. Here's some beads, chant one round. They go, yeah. And then they don't do it. So then it goes. But if you do it, then so the initial kind of like, you know, lifting the arm when you're doing your physical therapy exercises because your arm got damaged, you do it because you know it's going to get my arm functioning to a normal condition again. If there's faith in the knowledge and the process of the physical therapy, I can. So that's a beginning, is faith. So that's, you know, bringing internally by practically applying. It's still not, you know, fully at the heart level. It's somewhat at the head level. But it's a beginning. And then, you know, sensing, you know, like higher purposes of life. Is the higher purpose of life simply having knowledge, or is the higher purpose of life living true to our values? And that which, so, it then just starts to move to the heart. Just, you know, introspection, reflection, hearing from others and speaking to others and interacting with others from that place. We're not, say it again, that's not our education system. Education system is an information-based education system. And you're handsomely rewarded for becoming good at it. There's something up there, you bring it in here, put it on your hard drive, and press the button, it comes back out again. Okay, you get an A. No transformation, just information. Then you get a job. Then you can, you know, live your life like that. I'm successful. And the deeper purpose of life has another process. So it doesn't mean we don't do the practical things, but we have to do the other things. And you cultivate it. So one of the best ways to cultivate it is somebody that's good at it. You learn from somebody that's good at it. And you request their support and hear from them on a regular basis, and gradually having that desire, then it can come. Yes?
As you were explaining about the sandarbha of the ladder, can you explain the Bhagavan sandarbha and Krishna sandarbha, both are different?
Yeah. Bhagavan is a category and Krishna is the person who occupies the position. Bhagavan is a category of the absolute truth, just like Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan Iti Shabyate. Bhagavan is the category. And then there's different Bhagavans, and amongst the Bhagavans, Krishna is the supreme. That's the difference. So that main verse, the Mahavakya of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, the Paribhasa Sutra of the Srimad Bhagavatam is, you know, the main verse again and again in different ways, making references and cross-references. Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna's, so that's, Krishna is the one that's the supreme amongst those who are also Bhagavan. That's the difference. Yes.
But now when we are going through this bhakti, this spiritual life, sometimes we realize that whatever I thought was good is actually not good for me, or whatever was bad I was actually good. So I'm struggling in between, like, is it something like I need to even wonder about it?
Yeah. I mean, if you don't wonder about it, what's going to happen? And if you do wonder about it, what's going to happen? There's a saying in the Bible, seek and you shall find. Or in the Vedas, it's atato brahma jigyasa. Same idea. The inquisitive spirit is good. You don't be obsessive about it. That's not good. But inquisitive is good. Because you have, just from what you just said, you're just realigning with truth with a capital T. So this might be useful in the pursuit of Bhakti Siddhanta's language, a search for truth, search, jigyasu, and, you know, search, seek, and you shall find. Search for the truth. So it's good. Yes, it's good. And then you be patient while you're being, you know, searching. Because you know Krishna will help you. And, you know, maybe he's giving you the signal, just don't have your receiver on. Right? You know, it's the realigning process should be natural and, you know, not forced. But not forced doesn't mean don't search. Continue to inquire and search. And then get the alignment right. And then, you know, finer and finer and finer adjustments.
Yeah, the hardest problem is acknowledging it.
Well, you just acknowledge it publicly. This is, you know, at the head level, yes, and now move it to the heart level. You know, give it a strong yes. It's a gradual. Don't beat yourself up. Just, you know, keep moving. Search for the truth. That's Krishna. And you want to align with Krishna. And you see something. So of those things that you know that are doable, you do those. And then celebrate. Then you're ready for the next. Okay. Yes.
Same question, you know. So how can we do this introspection, like a detached way, you know, so that we don't get distracted from our practices and put into our self-history, you know?
This question was asked yesterday in a different way. It's stay focused on the goal. Well, how do you do that? Be clear what the goal is and be committed to the goal. Now my conditioning is I'm distracted. So I'm not going to get to being focused on the goal just by snapping my fingers and say, okay, you know, for countless lifetimes I've been distracted from the goal. Now I'm going to be not distracted from the goal. It's not going to happen like that. So it's just recommitment and recommitment and recommitment according to capacity. To hit the reset button however many times. It's like chanting japa. A devotee told me that Prabhupada told them, when we chant our 16 rounds, we have 25,000 opportunities every day to achieve spiritual perfection. Because all you need to do is chant one name, fully attentive. It's a powerful message, because think about it when you complete your japa for this morning. One name out of, so it's just each name you chant, each mantra you chant, each round you chant, however you want to measure it, it's an opportunity. And we're, you know, we're missing the golden opportunity of spiritual perfection, but the good news is we're given the chance again. As long as our breath is with us, we can continue. So be focused on the goal as your capacity permits. It's like the same example of physical therapy when your arm is limp because some accident. You can't move your arm. So then the therapist will say, can you clench your fist? Try it. Okay, good. Do 30 of those. Every day for 2 weeks. Come back again. I can't lift my arm yet, but I can clench my fist a little bit. And then by the end of 2 weeks, I can make a fist. Okay, great. Now let's try this one. Yeah, you get the idea. According to our capacity. So it's the bhakti muscle, or it's staying with focus upon the goal. And yes, it's true, we get distracted by distractions, and so many varieties of distractions, and we have our favorite distractions. And that's where we are. So you have to begin where you are. And, you know, do 30 of those. Practice. Abhyasa yoga yogtena. Chetasananya gamino. Constant practice and determination. Then the attraction to the distractions will diminish because the attraction to the goal becomes stronger. Why? Because you practiced staying focused on the goal. Although, you know, a zillion failures, in part because I didn't really try so hard. I was more absorbed in the distractions. Okay, that's the beginning. And then same, you know, how do we stay in good associations? Make the commitment. You know, the commitment is between you and Krishna. Make a commitment. I want to reach you. At the end of this life, I want to be closer to you than I am today. The wife of Samir told me yesterday, my husband felt really strongly. It wasn't until much later in his life that he was even introduced to the process of bhakti. So he wanted to make that not the case for his children. So his son, he really spent a lot of time helping to nourish bhakti. And the boy is a jewel. I don't know exactly what he's feeling in the loss of his father, but there's some strength in that young boy, some devotional strength. So there's the father, there's the son, and then there's us. You know, we also, whatever stage we began our bhakti process, and we may not have Samir, you know, guiding us from childhood to do what his young son is able to do now. Not just recite slokas, but his quality is amazing. Not just sloka recitation. So, and here we are. So we are where we are. And so with commitment to Krishna and the association of those who are also committed to Krishna, the association of devotees, We make steps according to our capacity. Slow but steady wins the race, Prabhupada said. There's parables about it, but you know, the hare and the tortoise. So be a tortoise, it's fine. You know, just stay with the process. Somebody else maybe, you know, can run fast. Stay with the process. Step by step. Stay committed to the goal. And we're distracted. Stay committed to the goal anyways. In good association with that commitment between you. It's a relation between you and Krishna. Krishna will see. And Krishna will help. Can't do better than that. From our present position. So at the end of our lifetime, let us be closer to Krishna than we are today. And that's closer than we were, you know, some years ago. We're closer to Krishna today. Let us be closer to Krishna. Let's keep moving to our capacity. Sustainable steps. And just be clear what the goal is and work towards the goal. It's one of the reasons why I was thinking about it this morning. I want to spend some time just a little sharing. I completed 2 years worth of studying Tattva Sandarbha, and before that, 2 years of studying Brahma Samhita, and they're both like, you know, get your binoculars out to find out what's up there in those texts. So now Thanksgiving is over, and next Thanksgiving, I've been so busy I haven't even thought about what's the topic going to be. But I think I'd like to speak from Bhakti Sandarbha, just start that exercise, because I've always wanted to do it, so why not do it? So I'm thinking of what are the resources for Bhakti Sandarbha gathers. But why go to Bhakti Sandarbha before the next Sandarbhas? Because Paramatma Sandarbha, Bhagavat Sandarbha, Krishna Sandarbha. Well, for a similar reason why Rupa Goswami wrote Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Bhakti. Now, he also wrote Laghu Bhagavatamrita, which is the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world, the avatars, a book on the avatars, just primarily that. The last section is about the devotees. Then he starts with Prahlad, because how can you access the personality of Godhead without the devotees and honoring the devotees? So that's there. But the bhakti process is necessary to connect us with the goal. It's necessary to know the goal, but it's also necessary to have the bhakti process to connect to the goal. And I believe they're working on Paramatma Sandarbha next, so I'm thinking I'll go to the Bhakti Sandarbha, and then when they get the Paramatma Sandarbha, go to they'll have Gopi Puranadana's commentary. But the bhakti process is so important for each one of us. However clear or less clear or more clear we are about Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what is all of the significance of that? We have the basic idea, Krishna is the Personality of Godhead. Now how do we go about serving Him? And how do we get rid of the obstacles that are in the way of our serving Him? Anyway, bhakti. Just a little sharing. Just do 30 of these. Yes.
Just further on that, like particularly japa, like, you know, there is this sense of discouragement that anyway, I'm going to lose. It will last for 2-3 days, and then anyway, it's going to come back to the same situation. That, so there is this sense of discouragement.
It's similar to what she's saying? Similar? You get enthused, inspired, and then...
Yeah. But it will come back, and 3 days later, it's the same. So I just wanted to...
I like what Prabhupada writes in Nectar Devotion about the child's capacity to walk. Same. The capacity is there. So the little child gets up and takes a half a step and tumbles. Now some child will start to cry right away and others won't cry right away. And then some will just get right back up again and take another half a step and tumble. You know, their motor skills aren't developed. But the walking propensity is within. So that's the motor skill, and this is a devotional skill. You just get back up again. Refocus. Hit the reset button. And okay, now what? Why was I doing this to begin with? You know, that's a good exercise. Okay, now I know what my value is, and now I'm going to live by my value. And I'm not there yet, but it's just keep going. Incrementally, step by step. Because with full confidence, as walking propensity is within the child, the nature of the soul is to be in service to Krishna. It's already there. And some persons are more athletic than others. And some persons are more evolved in their life of devotion than others. It's not a competition. It's your relationship with Krishna. That's it. And just exercise those activities in relation to devotion to Krishna. Just stay with it. Strive by right means. You're guaranteed of success. So that it's not dependent upon simply, you know, your skill. It depended upon mercy. You work at it. That's something, you know, endeavor is the five factors of action. That's something we can do. Then there's four others, and ultimately a super soul. So turn your attention to super soul instead of, oh, I don't have the skill. Krishna will give you the skill. It's already there. It just has to mature. Walking propensity is there. Last question.
How to be always be present?
How to be always present. Never be absent. It's the same question as hers, you know. It's the commitment to do so. And you work on it. That's how to always, without exception. You strive.
Any practical tips that do I catch myself?
Yeah, that's a practical tip, man. Here's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says about tips. I'll just like paraphrase it. This isn't his language. The value of the tip, this, that, the other thing, is valuable only in as much as there's commitment to the goal. When there's commitment to the goal, then the tip takes on value. Without, it's just a mechanical, another mechanical, another mechanical, another mechanical. I'm still in the same place. Then I'm feeling, oh, even the mechanical doesn't help me. It's the commitment to your relationship with Krishna. You know, that's the from the heart message, Uma. The commitment to the relationship with Krishna. And that's our problem. We came here because of the opposite, dvesha. And we want tips. Take care of the dvesha problem, please. And then this one, that one, the other one. And then stay with one of them. Not, don't be, you know, jumping around. Stay with, go deeply with any one of them. But based on commitment. Then that's a from the heart message. Just like a relationship. When you're committed in a relationship, you can work through anything. When you're not committed in a relationship, anything becomes problematic and easily rupture the relationship because it originally wasn't a relationship because you weren't committed to begin with. Krishna consciousness is all about relationships and starts with our relationship with Krishna. And our relationship with Krishna starts with our relationship with the Holy Name and the spiritual teachers that are taking us to Krishna. Address that. That's the tip. Okay. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki Jai.